From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. 1-866-408-7669. We're back in action today. A lot going on. It looks like President Biden's going to speak again. I know. I'm so excited. He's going to make his first public address since leaving in shame in January. He's been blasted almost every day by President Trump, I think deservedly, because he did such a terrible job. And now we're finding out he wasn't even doing the job, but he's going to blast President Trump on Social Security, make up some stories how Trump is getting rid of it, which he's never said. But all the Democrats seem to say that. And I'm sure that's why Trump is Biden is speaking out today. And the vice president and president will have lunch today. That's pretty much the schedule, as well as we see. They will have the Commander-in-Chief trophy presentation to the Navy midshipmen from beating the Army at Redskins Stadium. So before we get to Lieutenant Colonel Alan West at the bottom of the hour, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Harvard is acting more entitled than ever. President Trump made the direct and correct decision to defund to the tune of over $2 billion. U.S. taxpayer dollars should never be propping up anti-Semitism.
And that is so true, at least Stefanik. College crackdown. Trump goes after the cesspool of anti-Semitic, anti-American behavior among faculty and students at the elite institutions, and they are fighting back. Why I believe this could be 47's greatest triumph and why he simply has to win.
Number two.
China's been selling off treasuries for some time. It's not a brand new development. And for so many decades, we haven't had fair market access. So again, we see China taking action, implementing their policy to try to be less tied up with us as well.
And that is true. And China's already made another move this morning, telling Boeing, keep your aircraft. We don't want them. Tariff mania. This has brought to the surface the simmering resentment China has for America and America has for China. They are acting on it, too, also stopping rare earth to us. We have the latest, including the deals that are coming in and the exemptions that might be coming out.
Number one.
That was an outrageous scene in the White House, and there's a whole lot of lying going on. President Bukele does have the power to release Abrego Garcia. Donald Trump is clearly ignoring a court order.
And that he's there talking about Bukele is the president of El Salvador, missing the point. Border crossing apprehensions of illegal criminals is happening. At such a clip, even the most optimistic Trump supporter could not have imagined this much success. And yet the media focuses on MS-13, El Salvadorian illegal sent back to El Salvador. And the case is more breaking news on the illegal front. So first off, this is what everyone's focusing on. I think the El Salvador president comes here and when he did what we asked him to do and he cracked down on illegal immigration leaving his country, got rid of and locked up almost every MS-13 person that he could, put him in a maximum security prison. We've all seen the video. And then when they come out and we capture him in the U.S., they worked out a deal for about $6 million. We sent him back to him. One guy from Maryland, they say in 2019, he was a member of MS-13. They weren't going to send him back right away while his case was pending. And then that's the judge at the time. Nothing to do with Trump. So now, whatever happened, he popped up on the ICE list. They picked him up and sent him back. And they're saying that's the biggest story out there. Look, this is a story. Absolutely. But this is not close to the story when it comes to illegal immigration and border crossings. I mean, I got some numbers for you that you're going to think I made it up. In March of 2024, there were 4,488 people coming across our border per day. In February of 2025, 330. March of 2025, 264. 264 the whole border, down 20% from last month and 94% from a year ago. And you want to focus on, well, this MS-13 guy who was living in Maryland was not a threat? And who called him a threat? Who said he was MS-13? A judge in 2019. Not Stephen Miller, not Pam Bondi. So I know it's a story. If you picked up an innocent person in a park and you just put him in an El Salvadorian prison, then I think it's a big story. This is a story. And to me, it sounds like this MS-13 guy turned on some of his gangsters, and the judge said, whatever you do, don't send him back to the Gambino crime family because he's already turned on the Gambino crime family. Don't put him back with him. Sammy the Bull turned on John Gotti. You don't put him back with the mob family that he turned on. Okay, I'm not that broken up by it. So when people find that you're MS-13, I don't know. Do you ever reform from that? Do you take your tattoos off? I don't get it. So that's the big story. You would think some of these things would be, a year ago, they said the only way to stop illegal immigration is comprehensive immigration reform. Joe Biden said that's the only thing you could do. You can't stop it. The world is in a migration. The world is migrating collectively. That's what we're told by Mayorkas, who becomes a bigger disaster the more I think about it every day. So the president of El Salvador is here. And that came up. Cut three.
Yeah, we even had this gang member from Venezuela, one of the ones you sent, and we interviewed him just, to get some information, et cetera, from them. And he said, I got arrested 6 times, but they released me the 6 times, so I should be released again. And then he said, well, what's the last thing you do? And he said, well, I shot a cop in the leg, but I didn't kill him. I just shot him in the leg. And we're like, this guy was arrested 6 times here in the United States, 6 times. He was released 6 times. So these are, there's something broken.
Yeah, do you think that it's okay? That happens in Boston, although there was a big arrest yesterday by a guy accused of incest and molesting other kids. ICE had to go in there, no help from the cops because the mayor doesn't want any help. But Bukele says, listen, this is not my problem. I'm not going to ship him back out. He's in El Salvador. He's born in El Salvador. He goes to your country illegally. You sent him back, and I'm supposed to ship him back? Cut two.
Most people are suggesting that I smuggle terrorists into the United States, right? How can I return him to the United States? Like, I smuggle him into the United States, or what do I do? Of course, I'm not going to do it. It's like, the question is preposterous. How can I smuggle a terrorist into the United States? I don't have the power to return him to the United States.
Okay. So you cover the story. You know what the headlines are everywhere? Maryland man unjustly sent to El Salvador. Now, the Justice Department official said, yeah, we shouldn't have sent him back. They got rid of that Justice Department official. Don't pretend to be a lawyer. But they said there was the wrong message, and they didn't make a mistake. Now, the court says you have to make an effort to get him back. They made an effort. They can't decide foreign policy. The Supreme Court said you can't decide foreign policy, but you should make an effort to get him back. They haven't been able to. So every day they're going to have to go and tell the judge at about 4 o'clock today, we tried to get him back. We couldn't get him back. We asked him, and he said no. So here's what people should understand. This is totally being spun, and it's a distraction. You watch Jon Stewart leave The Daily Show with this story because they don't want to tell the other story. I guess it's not funny enough. They want to talk about tariffs, suddenly make Saturday Night Live. Okay. Can you talk about the crackdown and anti-Semitism on these college campuses? I'm not sure why so many famous Jewish people weren't upset by it outside Bob Kraft, but almost nobody was. I guess Mike Rappaport was another one. But on this guy, Garcia, here's how they spun it. They issued an order saying the lower court, this is what they said. The Supreme Court issued an order stating that the lower court properly requires the government to facilitate Garcia's release from custody in El Salvador to ensure that this case is handled as it would have been had he not been improperly sent to El Salvador. However, in a warning to the lower court, don't overstep your authority. This is what the Supreme Court said. The higher court also asked the lower court to clarify what it meant when it demanded the government effectuate his return. Garcia is currently being held in El Salvador. It is unclear what impact President Bukele's statements will have on the case. So if you look at the New York Times, they say this. In the Oval Office on Monday, Attorney General Pam Bondi said that 2 counts, an immigration court and an appellate court had ruled that Mr. Garcia was a member of MS-13. Can we just stop there? That should be in every headline. In 2019, MS-13 gang member Albergo Garcia was taken from his house in 2025 and brought to El Salvador. Now, you might want to know why he should stay, what the danger is to his health, But how can you possibly write this story without saying gang member or MS-13 member, as ruled by a judge back in 2019 when Pam Bondi was the attorney general in Florida? So it goes on to say this. To be clear, Garcia has never been charged, not convicted, of being a member of the gang. But during the deportation proceedings, some evidence was introduced that he belonged to MS-13, and the judges decided that was enough to keep him in custody. Okay? So a judge decided to keep him in custody. Evidence was produced to say he's MS-13. That's called a proceeding towards a deportation. The Justice Department submitting, and this is when then I asked again, should we get rid of this guy a couple of days ago? And this is what the Justice Department said. They submitted in filing more than an hour late, echoed many of the recalcitrant remarks that administration officials made in the Oval Office. Yes, that he's a member of MS-13, including the assertion that in 2019, a judge determined that he's a member of MS-13. I don't get it. I just don't understand it. If it was Al-Qaeda, if it was ISIS, you would never say Maryland man. You would say a member of ISIS in Maryland was deported to El Salvador. And if you want to say wrongly, unjustly, illegally, then you do it. But this is a total distraction over the biggest story. Other major stories regarding immigration I think are important. ICE arrested a Brazilian alien charged with incest, aggravated child rape. They had to overcome local authorities to get him. According to a news release, his name is Daniel Garcia. A 57-year-old Cuban national was arrested at his home in Miami. This is another guy taken into custody by ICE and FBI. That's a story you could be covering. How about this? This is kind of interesting. I think in an effort to avoid all these criminal proceedings, at 10 a.m., a hearing on the Department of Justice attempt to drop the case against the alleged top leader of MS-13. Remember we told you about the takedown with Pam Bondi and Christine Noem and the FBI director present? And they take this guy into custody. And he is Henry Villatoro Santos, allegedly the East Coast leader of MS-13. Now, they tell you about all the background. They got him. So to me, they're just sending him back to prison in his country. Why not charge him? You're seeing why not charge him. The minute you start charging these guys, then all of a sudden they got to get their day in court. Then they got to go get their lawyer. And then it's going to take more time. Then you got to house them. They just said, and I talked to the Governor Youngkin last week about this, we're just going to send him out right to a prison in another country. No charges. Get him out. So they're going to try to stop him, Department of Justice, because our own Department of Justice is working against us getting what is now listed as a terrorist organization, MS-13, out of our country. I guess you haven't seen any of the horrible things they did on Long Island, cutting out people's hearts, cutting off limbs and torturing them, cutting off fingers. But that's okay. You just don't feel it, right? We just got to be good to all people. We're a nation of immigrants. We're not a nation of illegal immigrant killers. So I just don't understand a lot of the logic here. When we come back, I'll talk about the latest with the tariffs and the war with China. And the bigger question, as we start to disentangle ourselves from China, why were we not doing this sooner? Why were we not seeing the enemy across the ocean and saying, this is the problem? They've infiltrated our borders. They're buying land around our military installations. They've hacked into our almost every computer system. They put students on our campuses to spy on us. They try to interdict our ships in the South China Sea. They harass our allies. What more proof do you need? They steal our intellectual property. They just knock off our patents, and they all get away with it. And then we let them infiltrate us with TikTok and everything else. Finally, we have somebody standing up, and people are crying. This is going to be too painful as we decouple on trade. I think it's necessary. And I say we stick it out until they give up. We do not give in. Brian Kilmeade Show, so glad you're here. Your call's next.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door, exploring the life and crimes of five serial predators from across the United States. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Do you think that these tariffs are being carried out in a practical way or a chaotic way?
I think we'll see. So far, very disruptive. So far, very disruptive, right? And so we don't know what the numbers are. But that could be part of a process, right? It depends where we are at the end of the 90 days. I think that right now we are at a decision-making point and very close to a recession. And I'm worried about something worse than a recession if this isn't handled well.
And that is Ray Dalio. We hope to be catching up to him soon, too. That was on NBC. And he said he's one of the best investors, most respected investors in the world. He's got a lot of investment in China, as I remember, 75 years old from Bridgewater. So he's being open to it. I mean, he mostly, for the most part, I don't consider him a Trumper, but he's open to it. But he knows there has to be a realignment because with our trade relationships. So far, we understand 10 have come in really strong, like almost ready to sign. But they said there's been over 100 nations who have called us to get on the same page. I'm not sure what the market's doing today, but yesterday we went up to over 300 points. But China is the one who's really throwing this is somewhat of a curveball. And they knew China would react, but now they're using this as an opportunity to try to send us a message that you better not try this again. They halt critical exports as the war intensifies, the headline. This came out in the New York Times yesterday. Heavy earth metals, rare earth magnets. Evidently, they not only have a lot of them, natural resources, but they've been hoarding a lot of it, too. By far, doubled the second most who's been hoarding it, Vietnam, then Brazil, then Russia, then India, then Australia. We need it. But let me ask you, why are we not in the Congo? Why are we not cutting a quick deal with Ukraine? Why are we not in Minnesota getting our own rare earth? It's national security. You can't tell me there's not reason now to go ahead and do it. The good news is NVIDIA, the chip maker, announced Norwegian company would produce supercomputers for AI made entirely in the U.S. in the next 4 years. The company said it will produce up to $500 billion of AI infrastructure in the United States in a partnership with TSMC, which is a Taiwanese company. The engines of the world's AI infrastructure are being built in the U.S. for the first time, NVIDIA's head chief operating officer said. I love it. How fantastic is that? Now, that's a win. But what's going to get you in the short term? Right away, small businesses are definitely going to be affected as prices have gone up. And right now, I think it's China running around Southeast Asia, telling Vietnam, telling Indonesia, stay with us. I'm more reliable. You're going to like us better. But they've already been bullying the whole region. Nobody likes them. Now, if we could get some semblance, now there could be an exemption now for automobile companies, been in touch with some of the majors, and they're concerned that even though they built most of the car here, if they got to go to Canada for certain things and they got to go overseas for other things, are those items in a car predominantly built in America going to have to be subjected to those tariffs? And it's complicated, obviously. So what do you do? So maybe exempt them for a few days and try to work this out. Maybe give me a schedule of how you're going to bring more manufacturing here. So some of those people in the Rose Garden, when he announced the tariffs, won't feel like you abandoned them just because things got tough. I'm going to talk when we get back with some of the money being held back from our Ivy League institutions and how they're fighting back with Lieutenant Colonel Alan West.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. It's tax season, and we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's one you need to hear. $16.5 billion. That's how much the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud last year. Now here's a good number. 100 million. That's how many data points LifeLock monitors every second. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it, guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think I know what's in the president's heart, but I don't know what's in his head. The people you're talking about are right. The administration has not given one clear rationale for its tariffs. I think that's intentional. That I don't know, but my guess is it's intentional, and that it is part of the president's negotiating strategy. But Jake, I don't want to feign understanding here. I don't know. But that's my best guess, knowing how the president operates.
Senator Kennedy yesterday just saying, I'm not really sure where we're going with this, but I understand the intention. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, Dallas County Republican Party Chair, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director, former congressman from Florida, joins us now. And Colonel, I know what you're going to be doing August 23rd.
Yep, I'm going to be with you down here in Dallas, Texas.
Unless, of course, your family has an event, and I fully understand. That's the only thing I can excuse.
They will all come to your event.
All right. Front row, VIP seats. You know, I'll make sure that I'm wearing a good outfit, good cologne, so I won't embarrass you. All right? So go to BrianKilmeade.com and meet Alan West. History, Liberty, and Laughs, and I'll be with Fox Nation. But, Colonel, just what do you think about what Senator Kennedy said? He's loyal to the president, but he feels as though he's not sure about the strategy. How do you feel?
Well, I'm sure about the strategy. I mean, what the president is understanding is that there are four elements to a nation's power. I learned that in my strategic studies as a major at the Army Staff College, and that is called the dime theory. It's diplomatic, informational, military, and economic. And he is trying to leverage America's economic power to, you know, right the wrongs of the trade imbalances. Look, go back to 1996, and you can see Nancy Pelosi on the House floor arguing against giving China the most favored trade nation status. And at that time, we had like a $34 billion trade imbalance with China. Look at where it is today. So what the president is trying to say is, look, you are impeding us by way of tariffs coming into your markets, but yet you want to be able to enter into our market, which is the number one consumer market in the world, without any, you know, ramifications or consequences or tariffs. Let's have a level playing field. I believe in free trade, but it has to be fair trade. And I think you already see many of these countries are coming to the table. And when you look at what has happened with China, we didn't defeat the Soviet Union militarily. We defeated them economically. And China is leveraging the fact that we have allowed them into the World Trade Organization. People want cheap goods, and they're using that to build up their navy and their global hegemonic designs by way of this One Belt, One World strategy. So we got to challenge China economically.
And they feel as though their integrity has been challenged, and they don't want to give in. And right away, they decided they're going to not fulfill any Boeing contracts. They don't want any Boeing planes. They're not going to give us any more rare earth and magnets. For some reason, we've never thought it would be a good idea to go elsewhere for it, which is nuts. So this is for keeps. Keep in mind, we know that they need us to consume their goods, but they are willing to let their people hurt as usual. But they want to send us a message. They want to look like the tough guys.
Well, the thing is, I found it quite laughable that the Chinese would talk about their integrity being challenged. We all know that they lie. We all know that they cheat. We all know that they do everything possible to undermine the global economic situation by way of, you know, undermine their own currency. And when you look at how China has gone all across the world seeking out raw materials and things of this nature, going out and, you know, buying and building up these port facilities only to extort the countries that let them in, it's about time that the world stands up to China and realizes that they are not just a geopolitical threat for us, they are a geopolitical threat for the entire world. And so the theft of intellectual property, the forced technology transfers, that's what China is doing. Look, Brian, think about it. 10 to 12 years ago, China did not have a blue water navy. Now, all of a sudden, they are out producing us with naval ships, and they have three aircraft carriers. So where do you think that trade imbalance, the money that they're getting, is going towards? It's not going towards improving the life of, the quality of life of the Chinese citizens.
So I want to bring you to another area of expertise, and that's the Middle East. And we have Steve Witkoff leading the charge with Iran. Here's what President Trump said after day one of talks in Oman. The next one's going to be in Rome on Saturday. Cut 32. Mm-hmm.
Can you give us an update on Iran?
Yeah. Well, we're going to be doing it very shortly. Iran also, it was another way. I met with a different group of people in Iran, and we'll be making a decision on Iran very quickly.
Here's what Witkoff's takeaway was. Cut 33.
The president means what he says, which is they cannot have a bomb. The conversation with the Iranians will be much about two critical points. One, enrichment. As you mentioned, they do not need to enrich past 3.67%. In some circumstances, they're at 60%. In other circumstances, 20%. That cannot be. And you do not need to run, as they claim, a civil nuclear program where you're enriching past 3.67%.
Is there? I have a problem with that statement, but I want to hear what your problem is with that.
Well, my problem is, why are we even talking to them? Iran is a maniacal theocracy. They are the number one state sponsor of Islamic terrorism. And I think that Donald Trump should just say, I'm going back to what I did in my first term. I'm going to bankrupt Iran. We're not going to hear about Hamas, Houthis, Hezbollah, any of the other individuals. Iran is aiding and abetting, you know, Hezbollah agents to come across into, you know, Central America, I mean, South America by way of Venezuela and enter into the United States of America. So I don't know why we're sitting around and talking with them and trying to, you know, find some happy medium, because they are part of this global enemy that we have, being economically with the BRICS, which is Brazil, Russia, Iran, and China, and South Africa, or if you look at what they're doing militarily by supporting these belligerent groups. So I say we just put the economic pressure on and watch them collapse like we had done previously.
You know, Colonel, I feel a little differently. You're the expert, but I feel as though we can't even. But you have a sense of the region and the sense of the mentality. I would say this. I don't think we have time to even squeeze, because they're almost there with eight weapons. I mean, once they get one, they're going to get eight. And then if they're able, so we can't even squeeze. We have to either say zero. You can't have a nuclear program. You have oil and gas where you're floating on oil and gas. You don't need it. You won't use it. And it's got to be dismantled in front of us, or that's it.
No, I agree. And I think that a means by which you do get to that is putting all of those sanctions back on that commodity that they do have, the oil and gas, which means that you put a kibosh on Russia and China as well. You know, we have to start looking at the means by which we can pressure all three of these individuals. And I guess North Korea is part of that as well. That's what the Trump administration should be seeking to do. And you're right. It should be zero. Because when you understand their theology, you know, getting this weapon will mean catastrophic consequences. This is not about the mutually assured destruction theory that we had with the Soviet Union. They are going to use it, and they're going to use it against first Israel, and they will give it to terrorist organizations. And the next thing you know, we'll have the dirty nukes going off all over the place, especially here in the United States of America. So you're right. I say we go to zero.
All right. So today in the Wall Street Journal, it says Trump's aides are pushing the president to be a little bit more tough on Vladimir Putin, saying that, you know, start putting sanctions on oil and gas. They're moving that through the Senate. And when you see them blowing up, suburban neighborhoods in Sumy, Ukraine, at the same time refusing to have a ceasefire in the Black Sea. This is what Zelensky said on 60 Minutes, cut 27.
Putin's ultimate goal is to revive the Russian Empire and reclaim territories currently under NATO protection. And the United States, being part of NATO, means it will be involved in any potential conflict. Considering all of this, I believe it could escalate into a world war.
I think he's right.
No, he is right, without a doubt. I mean, Vladimir Putin is a former KGB senior officer who said his greatest disappointment of the 20th century was the collapse of the Soviet Union. So, yes, he's trying to do that. Think about all the presidents, you know, previous to Donald Trump, that have tried to trust Vladimir Putin. George Bush infamously said that he looked into Putin's eyes, and I think he saw, you know, his true meaning. I don't know. But the next thing you know, I mean, Putin is going into Georgia. We know about Moldova. And now we see with Obama and Biden, he's going into Ukraine. So this is a despotic ruler. He's a dictator. He's ruthless. And he has these designs as well. And so we have to start looking at, I kind of get upset when I hear people say, well, we're forcing him to do this. No, we didn't force Adolf Hitler to do what he did. He saw weakness and he took advantage of it. And I think that's the same thing we have to see with Vladimir Putin.
So listen to what Trump said. Cut 30.
He's always looking to purchase missiles. You know, he's against. Listen, when you start a war, you got to know that you can win the war, right? You don't start a war against somebody that's 20 times your size and then hope that people give you some missiles. If we didn't give them what we gave, remember, I gave them javelins. That's how they won their first big battle with the tanks that got stuck in the mud, and they took them out with javelins.
He did not start that war.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, that would be just like saying, you know, Czechoslovakia started a war against Nazi Germany, or Poland started a war against Nazi Germany. The aggressor here is Vladimir Putin, and that needs to be recognized, that needs to be understood, and that needs to be confronted. But I would like to see us do it first and foremost by those sanctions, by those economic means by which we can cut them off. And again, you think about this, the trade imbalance that we have with China, the hundreds of billions of dollars and maybe trillions of dollars that they're getting, they're funneling that to Russia. They're enabling Russia. They're enabling Iran. They're buying oil and those type of resources from Iran. So that's how all of this ties together. If we can come back to what Senator Kennedy said, he does not understand. This is strategic. And I just would hope that maybe President Trump could sit down and give an Oval Office address and talk about the use of economic power and from a strategic perspective and tie all of these countries together, this new axis of evil that we're facing.
See, my feeling is I'd rather have Marco Rubio leading these negotiations. Number one, no human being can do Iran, Gaza, and Ukraine. I mean, what are we talking about? I mean, this guy's a real estate guy. And you have Marco Rubio, who, you know, understands foreign relations because he's been doing it for 16 years now. And plus, he has an aptitude for it. So listen to Steve Witkoff talk about what he thinks Putin's like, who's, you know, he met with him twice. Cut 31.
This is the third meeting I've had with him. This last meeting lasted close to 5 hours. We had two of his key advisors in the room at the time, Ushakov and Kirill Dmitriev. And it was a compelling meeting. And towards the end, we actually came up with, finally, but I don't mean it in the way that we were waiting. I mean it in the way that it took a while for us to get to this place. What Putin's request is to get to have a permanent peace here. So beyond the ceasefire, we got an answer to that.
I don't know. I don't know how much more patience. What do you think?
Vladimir Putin is a steely-eyed killer. You cannot send a real estate agent over to talk with, negotiate, whatever you want to call it, with steely-eyed killers. The only thing certain people understand is strength and might. And they understand when you look at them eye to eye and say, cut the crap, there will be consequences. And you say, look, this is what we are demanding. Don't allow these people to think they have any moral high ground whatsoever. In the Middle East, so often negotiations, compromise, all that stuff, they see that as weakness. And I think that right now we have to be able to portray strength.
So I just got to bring it to this high school story in Texas, as you could probably understand.
Oh, yeah.
His name is Carmelo Anthony. He went inside under the tent of the opposing school, and he was told to leave the tent. Against Austin Metcalf, asked him to, one of twins. And when he didn't leave the tent, he said, what are you going to do about it? He goes, you make me, one thing leads to another. And he takes out a knife and stabs Austin Metcalf to death. Cut 36 is now this Greg Willis, who's Collin County, Texas District Attorney, found out the judge lowered so far online, they've raised over $400,000 for his defense. Then they lower the bond to $250,000 and he makes bail. Cut 36.
As far as the bond reduction goes, you know, it's important for everyone to stay in their lane. And our lane was to argue that the judge should keep it at $1 million. The court decided to reduce it down to $250,000. And as you mentioned, put additional conditions on that, including house arrest and electronic monitoring.
He's going to say it's self-defense. He's already saying it. And Al Sharpton's going to be in your neighborhood before you know it. What do you think?
Well, let's just put this, if the shoe were on the other foot, let's say that a white teenager was under a tent, wrongful tent of a black teenager on a track meet, and they asked him to leave, and all of a sudden he pulled out a knife and said, if you touch me again, you'll see what happens, and he stabbed a kid to death, and the kid ends up dying in his twin brother's arms. Can you imagine the outcry in this country right now?
Absolutely.
So now all of a sudden we have this happening, and we have a black judge, Angela Tucker, up there in Collin County, who reduces the bail by 75%. Why was this kid carrying a knife to a track meet? That no one can answer that. And if you want to talk about self-defense, you don't have any grounds for self-defense. No one was carrying a weapon. You were asked to leave the tent where you were not supposed to be. So this is a travesty and injustice, and Al Sharpton is going to come down here, and he's going to get met with an incredible backlash. This right is right and wrong is wrong. And everyone always talks about, you know, social justice and all of this stuff. What about when justice should be blind and justice should look at this and say, this is a teenager who murdered another teenager wrongfully. He had a weapon that he should not have had at a track meet.
What are you doing with a knife at a track meet? It's crazy. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, thanks so much.
My pleasure. God bless you and take care. And happy Easter.
All right. Same to you. Happy Easter to you and your family. And everybody listening, back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Don't forget about the paucity. That means the dearth. That means the lack of enthusiasm for these jobs at this moment. We need to do something collectively to reinvigorate enthusiasm for the skilled trades. And you've heard me say it 1,000 times. When we pulled shop class out of high school, we unleashed a kraken. And it's been an uphill slog ever since to persuade the kinds of people that we were just looking at right to give these jobs an honest look. That's what keeps me up at night.
So that was Mike Rowe Saturday night, Sunday night, 10 o'clock on One Nation. I asked him because we're talking about bringing jobs back and people are nervous about the tariffs, but the blue-collar workers see that he's out there for them, and so is Scott Bessent. He said on our show, income disparity is the one thing that worries him most about the country before he was Treasury Secretary. But I thought what he said next was also true. Listen to what else Mike Rowe said, Cut 23.
Since you mentioned my podcast, I'll tell you, most of the sponsors there make stuff in America, and I've been talking to them. I literally just got off the phone with the CEO at American Giant. And you got to put yourself in their place, too. For 15 years, they've been betting on this country. They're not affected at all by a global supply chain, but they're impacted by the ability to hire local talent in the manufacturing space. And I think that's what you're asking, right? For me, I'm rooting for the president. I want to see a reinvigoration of American manufacturing.
But he says there are currently 400,000 open positions in manufacturing in this country. So that number blew me away. I wonder if the president knows that. That's going to be key. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. Find out and see me in Dayton, Richmond, and Dallas. Keep it here.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. This hour is going to be exciting. We're going to have with us Emily Domenech, Senior Vice President of Boundary Stone Partners and former Senior Advisor to Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Bring us inside the big, beautiful bill. And David Wells, the workhorse pitcher for the superstar for the New York Yankees, three-time MLB All-Star, two-time World Series champion. I'm sure he could pitch nine innings right now. We have a Fox Nation special out called Did Babe Ruth Call His Shot? He knows history. He loves the Yankees and their history. He's going to be with us shortly, and we'll Zoom on that. You can see that on video on Fox Nation or BrianKilmeadeShow.com, and Varney and company will do a simulcast. Keep in mind, if you want to get the podcast, if it works better for your schedule when you can make your own schedule, we got a podcast every single day. Go to the Fox News app where you can hear the show and just click and watch. But you could also get the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, wherever you have Spotify or anything else. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Harvard is acting more entitled than ever. President Trump made the direct and correct decision to defund to the tune of over $2 billion. U.S. taxpayer dollars should never be propping up anti-Semitism.
That is You know who that is? That is Elise Stefanik, College Crackdown. Trump goes after the cesspool of anti-Semitic, anti-American behavior among faculty and students at elite colleges like Harvard, Columbia, and Princeton. And they are fighting back. Why I believe this could be 47's greatest triumph and why he simply has to win it.
Number two.
China's been selling off treasuries for some time. It's not a brand new development. And for so many decades, we haven't had fair market access. So again, we see China taking action, implementing their policy to try to be less tied up with us as well.
Tariff mania has brought to the surface simmering resentment China has for America and vice versa. They are acting out, too, telling Boeing, we're not buying your stuff, telling America, you're not getting our rare earth and metals and magnets. We have the latest.
Number one.
That was an outrageous scene in the White House, and there's a whole lot of lying going on. President Bukele does have the power to release Abrego Garcia. Donald Trump is clearly ignoring a court order.
Missing the point. Border crossing apprehensions of illegal criminals is happening as such a clip. Even the most optimistic Trump supporter could not imagine this type of success. But yet, all the media is focusing on one MS-13 El Salvadorian who got sent back to El Salvador. And I find that hard to believe. And I'll just cover it real quick. So there's this guy, and he is was sent back that they say he was sent back to El Salvador, where he's from. He did come here illegally in 2019 when he was before a judge. He did say, the judge did say he was part of MS-13 gang. Also saying if we sent him back, it might endanger him. So let's hold him here. So he has a family, lives in Maryland. And then they Trump takes over. ICE looks at him, goes, this guy's got to be out of here. Let's send him out. And they sent him out. And then their Justice Department lawyer at the time said, I don't think we should have sent him out because the judge said he should stay here, even though he's MS-13. Now, with Trump, you're MS-13, you're out. Now, but if you look at the courts, they say, no, he should stay here. So that's where the battle starts. So a judge rules that the president's got to, that he's got to try to facilitate him coming back to America, where I guess he would go to our prison. And I'm going to get into detail on it. So they're going back and forth on this. And what does all these words, these little words mean? Is the president really trying to get him back? Is the president of El Salvador really not able to get him here? This is a story. But why is it the story when you see border crossings are astoundingly low? Look at these numbers. In March of 2024, there were 4,488 per day. And that's low compared to 23 and 22 and 21. In February of 2025, this year, this term, this president, 330. Got that? 4,100 more under Biden's last year. And that was his best year. In March of 2025, this past March, just came to an end 17 days ago. 264 per day, down 20%, down 94% from a year ago. That's not unbelievable success. That is astounding. And so when the president of El Salvador comes here, and he's the guy with the Supermax prison, then when he took over, he was got threatened by gangs. He said, okay, I'm taking the military. We're going to go to every single house, get every single gang member. They tattoos themselves like idiots. And he grabbed them, threw them in jail, shaved their heads, threw them in jail. And now it's one of the safest countries in North America. And nobody noticed, too. He once started talking to some of the MS-13 guys and the TDA guys that he brought into his cell. We're paying him to hold these guys. And this is what he said. I was struck by this. Cut three.
Yeah, we even had this gang member from Venezuela, one of the ones you sent. And we interviewed him just, to get some information, et cetera, from them. And he said, I got arrested six times, but they released me the sixth time, so I should be released again. And then we said, well, what's the last thing you do? And he said, well, I shot a cop in the leg, but I didn't kill him. I just shot him in the leg. And we're like, this guy was arrested six times here in the United States, six times. He was released six times. So these are, like you said, there's something broken.
Of course. That's why they, and Joe Biden would say it's not true, number one. Number two, it's because we need comprehensive immigration reform. And then you have Mayorkas say it's global migration. So that to me is the story. But then they go all about this guy. I watch Jon Stewart. I usually, I thought he's been relatively clear. Just like Bill Maher doesn't like Trump, but he's saying, how do I deal with this for the next 4 years? I find him creative and funny. But this time was just all about this guy. I couldn't believe it. So he only works one day a week, and that was his focus. So I want to talk about tariffs. So China's taking this as a war. There's two stories here. We're trying to reconfigure our relationships with our allies. And we did it. He said 10% across the board, 90-day hold. Let's work out deals. Over 100 countries have come to us. 10 are ready to go. We're going to announce them shortly. That, according to all the experts that are on the inside of these negotiations. And it's been pretty friendly. And I think Maloney comes on Wednesday or Thursday of this week. So Italy's coming directly, and we're seeing everything come into place. But China said Boeing aircraft, we don't want it. Rare earth and rare metals and magnets, you're not getting it. So I'm struck by a few things. Well, this Trump's in over his head. No. What I'm struck by is, why the hell would we ever get our rare earth for all this modern technology and the electric cars that they love? Why would we depend on China for any of that? Especially at the wake-up call we have to have to the pandemic. So the president says, I'll talk to China. And China says, no, not until you show some respect to us. So Jameson Greer was on with Laura last night. He's the U.S. trade representative. He's doing what Lighthizer did last time. I don't know why Lighthizer's not doing it again. And this is what he said about China. Cut 16.
Part of the reason why we're in this spot originally is because China had decades of unfair trade practices. They limited our market access, and they took our jobs. They stole our technology. And now, with the president's new tariff program, which is designed to, you know, reset the table and get down the trade deficit, China is the only country that actually implemented its retaliation and set it on this course. So obviously that's concerning, and the president has been very clear that he's willing to talk to his counterpart and that he expects that at some point we'll have talks. We're not there yet, but that's his expectation, and I share that expectation.
And we'll see where this goes, because they're sticking with it, and they want to do it, and they want to stick it to us. And I'm sure they've thought about this a lot, but they actually have less power now than 2018. The question is, are we going to hold the line, and at what cost? And what cost to small business, people that, you know, in small, you know, independent shops and small businesses? The New York Post has a series of stories of small businesses that potentially could be really hurt or devastated because their products are made overseas. Here's Senator Tom Cotton. Just wrote a best-selling book about China and the dangers. Cut 20.
I don't think that he'll back down, at least in the short term. China has a lot of problems as well because of their monstrous, barbaric one-child policy, which resulted in the forced abortions of more than 300 million Chinese babies, more than 200 million forced sterilizations of Chinese women. They are in a demographic collapse. Their population is declining. They have massive debt problems, both public debt and business debt. They have, as you said, these ghost cities and a massive real estate glut. These are all serious long-term problems for China's economy. At the same time, in the short term, it could actually make them more dangerous and more aggressive in the same way that a cornered animal can lash out. So I think it's vital that we be vigilant, that we have strength and confidence in standing up for America and our friends in the Western Pacific against Chinese aggression, whether it's economic, diplomatic, political, or even military.
Keep your eye on Senator Tom Cotton. He's with Armed Services, military background, no nonsense. He understands the threat, called out the pandemic, told everybody it came from the lab before anyone thought that was possible. He knew it. Smart guy. He was on One Nation Sunday night at 10 o'clock. Back in a moment with Emily Domenici. She's a former senior advisor to Kevin McCarthy. Let's look at the big, beautiful bill and the battle against Ivy League education.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
What if I was a young student at Columbia? They're on a green card, British, come in, happy to be here, do all my paperwork, get to Columbia. And I start leading a group which is a bunch of white supremacists, and we start terrorizing black students in the way that they're terrorizing Jewish students. Well, hang on. In that circumstance, would we all be as comfortable with this, or is it the reality which was exposed by the mobs at Columbia, which is that for some reason, Jews get treated differently to anybody else when it comes to this kind of thing? Because if that had been, honestly, white supremacists, supremacists treating black students like that, they would be out the country,
you know,
in,
so
10
true.
In 10 minutes.
And it's 100% right. That was with Bill Maher. And that with me right now to talk about this and more, Emily Domenici, Senior Vice President of Boundary Stone Partners, former Senior Advisor to Kevin McCarthy. Your thoughts about what's happening now with this, with focus on these elite institutions?
You know, I think what we're seeing play out, particularly in the letter from Harvard yesterday in response to the Trump administration, is a fundamental misunderstanding of their relationship with the United States government. They feel as though they have an entitlement to U.S. tax dollars, despite having a massive endowment that exists tax-free. And that is simply not the case. They have no guarantee that they should be able to get U.S. tax dollars for research or for funding in any way, shape, or form. That's not something they deserve just on the outright.
So $2.5 billion the president took away yesterday that was going to Harvard because he said, we told you to do a bunch of things to change things and fight anti-Semitism, adopt a merit-based hiring and missions. We're going to oversee that. Prioritize ideological diversity. Didn't say Republican. Reform programs with records of anti-Semitism. Implement a mask ban. Discipline students' involvement in anti-Israel encampments and sit-ins. They're also not happy with the curriculum and the makeup of the faculty. And so they hired Robert Herr from the Herr Report and William A. Burke, who are known as conservative legal attorneys.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're looking to try to make the argument that they're being targeted for, you know, or their free speech is being limited or something along those lines. But I just, again, I think, you know, there's no, you don't have an entitlement to American taxpayer dollars. They're supposed to, we're making an investment in your institution. And that means it's a two-way street, two-way relationship here.
So how about Barack Obama came out and she said Harvard has set an example to other higher institutions in fighting back, rejecting an unlawful and ham-handed attempt to academic freedom. Was he speaking out on the anti-Semitism at his former college of Harvard?
Absolutely not. And I think, again, I, you know what? Harvard is free to do whatever they want on their campus.
Don't use
but
it.
That doesn't mean you get to take taxpayer dollars. And we've actually seen this from conservative institutions, for example. I saw a tweet yesterday from Hillsdale College saying, you know what? There's another path, which means you don't take federal dollars and you can maintain your freedom to do and say whatever you want. So I think it's, again, it's just a misunderstanding here. You also see these universities pushing back against things like the, you know, the rate of funding they can spend, they have to spend on research versus administrative costs. Many of them are like suing Department of Energy and the National Science Foundation saying, hey, you can't limit our ability to spend this research grant on our administrative costs because they're bleeding that money away that's supposed to go to fundamental science research.
And that's that whole overhead breakdown.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
As opposed to the actual research itself.
Exactly.
And now look at the faculty is way too big. The administrators are way too many. And they just up the number of they up the tuition. But Emily, the other thing to look at is who is deciding what international students get in, and should there be a limit on countries investing in colleges? Texas Tech, Qatar, UAE. Why are you so interested in our academic institutions? What are they getting in return?
Right. And I think, you know, we have to go back to this place where it is a privilege to study at a U.S. institution. These are some of the best academic institutions in the world across the country. It shouldn't be a guarantee that you get to come and go to school here. And you know, we ran into this back when I worked on the House Committee on Science, Space and Technology. We spent a lot of time investigating how China was funding students to come to the United States who were part of their Thousand Talents program, who were bringing our research back to China, bringing our intellectual property back to China, benefiting from U.S. taxpayer dollars, doing research and development and partnering in these at these academic institutions on areas like physics and mathematics and engineering that all have defense applications back in China. So we have to be thinking about the big picture here of like, what does the U.S. taxpayer fund? Really, really great research, but we need to make sure it's coming back into the U.S. economy.
But the more this, if this is going to go forward, I want them to expose more and more what you're doing. Okay, how do you hire people? How do you admit people? How much money are you getting from these guys? Do they want the discovery process of this fight? So let's see. So the big, beautiful bill, Kevin McCarthy was in charge of things like this, unwieldy, not easy. This is what James Blair, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff, said about where we're at right now. I think Chad said if you have to go 12 steps, we're at between 5 and 7 steps. Cut 35.
I absolutely see a way to finish line, and you're right. It's not necessarily easy. There's a lot of this to work through, and I think we'll get it done pretty quickly. I think, you know, before the summer, early summer, you know, maybe around May or June.
Your thoughts, Emily?
Yeah, I think he's right. You know, credit to Mike Johnson for being able to muscle this through.
And against, the president and picking up the phone.
Exactly. I mean, I think it all truly comes down to how much influence do the White House and President Trump have over the very conservative, fiscal conservative wing of the party? Because those guys are going to be the ones that's going to be hard to get across the finish line because they have an expectation for spending cuts that the Senate probably can't stomach. We've heard actually some what I find to be crazy things out of some of those guys, like Andy Harris, for example, saying, hey, maybe we need to raise taxes taxes on the richest Americans.
From 37.5 to 39.
Exactly, which I think it would be an absolute travesty for unified Republican government to raise taxes. And we saw, I saw Steve Scalise on TV this morning rejecting that proposal. But that's the kind of things you're hearing from these conservatives because they are so dead set on making sure that they get the spending cuts they were promised. So it's going to be an uphill battle.
Because I think it's legitimate that we got to cut the deficit.
Absolutely.
That's why DOGE, their cuts got to be figured into this, right?
Well, they do, but I will say, we saw the first numbers coming out of DOGE for the rescissions package this morning, and it's around $9 billion, which great start, guys, but we got to do way more than that if we're going to actually tackle our deficits.
I was shocked by how small that number
is. It's a really small number, and Congress should immediately pass it. $9 billion is not a huge number for the appropriators to swallow, but I think that's a great test to see whether or not they have the juice to really cut spending, because at the end of the day, lots of congressmen talk about wanting to cut spending. None of them want to cut their spending.
But they also don't want to cut Medicare, Social Security, or Medicaid, right?
Right. And those are the big spenders. We have to get into the entitlement space if we're really going to start talking about deficits and debt. But right now, all we're doing is the DOGE package is the low-hanging fruit, so it should be easy and quick.
Are you fascinated that Joe Biden's going to speak today?
Can people ever just retire? Can we ever get to a point where our politicians retire and go home?
Can I predict that he's going to say Social Security is being taken away?
Oh, of course. He's going to say Republicans want to cut $800 billion for Medicaid, you guys. You should go out and raise money for Democrats.
Is he going to say I could have beat Trump?
Oh, gosh,
he's already said it once.
I hope so, because it'll make the Dems apoplectic, and that'll be hilarious. Because
they'll be angrier than Trump.
Oh, for sure, 100%.
That would have made sense. Emily Dominich, thanks so much for coming in. David Wells is next. David Wells will bring us inside this Fox Nation special, the Babe Ruth Cola shot. Thanks, Emily.
Thanks for having me.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
There's been debates ever since 1932 as to whether or not Ruth called his shot.
You get a room of people, and they're all witnesses to an event. They're all going to give you a different interpretation of how that event took place.
The Cub fan perspective was it was all nonsense.
My opinion, he called the shot, and he hit it where he pointed.
That's what made Babe Ruth so special, because he would just talk smack and then back it up.
I want to believe that there was somebody out there who was big enough, bad enough, cocky enough to call his shot and actually make it happen.
I don't think there's any event in sport that is more disputed than whether or not Babe Ruth called his shot.
And that's why Fox Nation is doing a special on it. Did Babe Ruth call his shot against the Cubs after getting heckled by the Cubs bench? Did he point over the wall and did he hit it right there? David Wells loved the Yankees, their history. Took great pride in knowing all about it, and that was a great call to put him on this special. 3-time All-Star, 2-time World Series champion. Could probably pitch 9 innings right now. Never hurt. Innings horse. Yes, you can. David, welcome back.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate you being here, being with you, and talking some baseball.
You always appreciate the Yankee legacy. I know Don Larson, because you guys were both no-hitters. But when did you start getting attracted to the Yankee background?
As a little kid, just when I first started playing Little League Baseball, you just started reading. Like in school, you always heard about Babe Ruth. And when you're playing baseball, you got to check it out. And back then, no computers. We didn't have anything. So we had to go to the books. And Babe Ruth just stood out to me like a sore thumb. It was pretty cool, what he did for the game of baseball, his lifestyle. It was just like, I want to be that guy. So that's kind of how I, adopted that, and just through my whole career, just started reading up on him and watching everything else.
Yeah, before we talk more about this if we can. So they asked you to do this project about him calling the shot. What is so mythical about it?
It's just because Babe Ruth was so, everyone was infatuated by him. I mean, everything that he did, but for him to do things off the norm, that was Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth was, what he did back then, guys wish they would do now, because nobody does anything anymore. But, he was just, he had attitude. He had charisma. He had, he talked a lot of smack, because when you're that great at that point, people are going to come after you, as you well know. And, to me, I think he called the shot, because you see all the videos, you see all the pictures and all that, and then all the hoopla going on in the dugout. So he just pointed the bat out there and says, I'm going to hit it there. And he did.
That's pretty amazing. I won't ask what happened if someone called the shot when you were on the mound, how you would feel about that. Here's they said the Yankees, like, when they got to the game especially, they were hearing it from the fans when they got on the bus. Cut 46.
The Yankees, now with a 2-0 series lead, jumped on a train to Chicago for games 3 and 4. As they arrived at Union Station, they received a hostile welcome, to say the least. Lemons were thrown at ballplayers. And the Babe and his wife got the worst of it. They were spat on by angry fans. For old-time ballplayers, I guess this was par for the course.
In the 20s and 30s, it was a rougher game, period. Fighting was not unusual, and Babe Ruth, he took the brunt of things, and he was ready for it. Chicago was a hotbed of baseball, and it was a big game. It really was.
The crowd was huge. There were 50,000 fans there, and Ruth attracted, of course, the most attention.
Right. And of course he got it, and the Yankees end up winning that series. But back then, David, it was just right. You win your division, you go to the World Series, right?
Right.
So that made it quicker. And all of a sudden the two big cities, it must've brought the team closer though, to also to take the train. Can you imagine that, being on the train with your teammates for hours?
There'd be a lot of fights going on. I guarantee that, just because some guys want to sleep. Some guys want to play cards. They want to do their thing. And, you know, and I look at it back then, and back in them days, if you're doing, a lot of people smoked. Everybody smoked cigarettes or cigars, and, you know, I was never a smoker. You know, I'd have cigars, but, you know, from time to time. But that would just annoy the hell out of me, and it would probably entice me to take it out of his mouth, snap it, or then probably end up getting in a fight.
Right. You know what's so interesting back then? You know, they talk about the players having no power. You remember when Mickey Mantle hit the guy, got the triple crown, he basically said, okay, you can stay, come back next year. The players had no power back then, but Ruth was like a little like Jack Johnson in boxing. He was bigger than the sport. And famously, when he was asked, you know, how come you're getting paid more than the president? He said, I had a better year than he did.
Yeah,
he was really before his time.
He really was. But when you're that, I mean, he was good, but nobody knew what he was capable of doing until a few more years into his career. And then he just blossomed. And, you know, when you're that big, you know, you're going to get paid. And a lot of other guys were probably jealous, because you look at guys like Ty Cobb, Cy Young, Walter Johnson, pitchers like that, that were just incredible. Never even sniffed in the amount of money that Babe Ruth made. But like you said, he was outgoing. Like, you know, I wanted to be, when I was in New York, I went out every night. You know, I just was larger than life, and that was Babe Ruth. And, you know, because I wanted to emulate him at some point, but I had to go do my job. And that guy would go out all night, probably way more than I did, and just produce. And, you know, that's why he got paid. And he did have a better year than president.
He did. You know, so interesting, because he pitched and played for Boston. When the Yankees get him, he just played the field, right?
Yeah, I mean, he won 23 games twice. You know, I never won 23 games. I won 20, you know, once in 19. And to me, he was a two-way player, but, you know, a 5-tool player back then, because he could play outfield. He could throw, obviously. He can, well, let's say 4-tool, because I don't think he could run very good. But, you know, but other than that, you know, the man was just amazing. He was a freak back in the 20s, 19s and 20s. He was a freak.
All right. So, I want to talk about baseball, but get this on Fox Nation. And it drops. It's available right now today. Did Babe Ruth call his shot? Here's the debate that you'll get here's a sample of the debate you get throughout the show. Cut 47.
I think when you watch the footage, he's going back and forth with the Cubs bench, which had been going on for days, by the way. And if you watch the footage, he's doing this.
Yes.
Not this. He's doing this. And when he hits the home run, as he's rounding the bases, he's still doing this to the Cubs bench.
Others see the footage a bit differently.
I choose to believe he did, because at the end of the day, I want to believe in that story. I want to believe that there was somebody out there who was big enough, bad enough, cocky enough to call his shot and actually make it happen. I've watched baseball for 44 years,
right,
and I've never seen it done.
Yeah, so that's a little of the debate, and you're a part of it, David, so you're going back in history. Can we talk about baseball today? Are you following it?
Not really. I just, with the games, the analytics of the game, the changes of the game, it's kind of like a turnoff to me. But, you know, once in a blue moon, I might catch an inning or two. But other than that, I don't really follow it as much anymore. But, you know, I read up on it.
So I'm struck by one thing that I think you can respond to. Otani gets a almost $1 billion contract.
Right.
Was it $250,000 against the cap? Whoever heard of that? It's all deferred money. You can't pay for the best player in baseball an all-time record amount and only count a small fraction against the cap that gets you to the luxury tax. I mean, how is that fair that the Dodgers did that?
It's, you know what? Well, he deferred a lot of it too. So
yeah, that's what I mean.
Well, he freed up a lot of money for the Dodgers, but, you know, and there's still like Bobby Bonilla, he deferred his money. He's still getting paid. It's probably one of the greatest contracts in the history. And, but for that, when you defer the money, you could do that. And you know what? I think George Steinbrenner probably would have done the same thing because he wanted to win. He wasn't afraid to spend
the money. I don't fault the Dodgers. I fault the league. You got to just say, listen, you could defer a portion, but there's got to be like two-thirds got to count against the cap. Because, I mean, the Pirates might as well be in the Pirates, the A's. These other teams, the Twins, it's almost like they're playing in a different league.
But you know what, Brian? It's one guy. So one guy is not going to win you the World Series. He's good. They want to keep him there. It was a lengthy contract. And to me, it's something that it shouldn't happen. I don't think anybody should be paid that kind of money. But God bless them for getting it. You know, now you're seeing, I think Soto got $700 million. I think it was Mike Trout. What did he get? $400 million or something like that. But so those are the numbers that we could only fathom when we were playing. And when I first came up and I got to the big leagues, I think the most amount, I think Ricky Henderson was making $2 million. You know, George Bell might have been making 1.5. So that was huge back then. When I signed my first $1 million contract, man, I thought I was on top of the world. I thought I was set for life. Nowadays, you're not set for life. You need to have at least, you know, $5 million at least and be smart with your money to even get it in the sports world, because sports athletes, you know, what all across the board, they live a different lifestyle than most people. But if they're not smart with their money, they're going to be in the dump. And you've seen a lot of players do that. A lot of athletes go down and you just got to be smart with it. It's like every day, you know, Joe Schmo, you have to be smart with your money to survive.
We only got less than a minute left, but how much did the Yankees push to be win now with the Judge era? You know, he's already 32 years old, 33 years old. How much would you push if you're GM of that team to get the talent to win now?
Well, you have to, and it starts with pitching. You know, Gerrit Cole went down. You know, that's a big loss for the Yankees. But for them, the pitching has to be solid because they've got the offense. It just has to gel. You know, 97 to 98 when I was there, we had both ends of it, so we were good.
David Wells, you're always good. Thanks again.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. In a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Stuart Varney on, you know, his show, FBN, fastest growing cable network in the country. Number one in business, by the way, especially now. I mean, the numbers are through the roof. People want to unwind, get ahead, understand, and not get caught not understanding the tariffs. So we'll be on with him. Just a quick note. I want you to go to BrianKilmeade.com, History, Liberty, and Laughs. Dayton, June 21st, August 23rd in Dallas, Texas. And then, of course, in September 27th, I'll be in September 23rd, Richmond, Virginia. So go to BrianKilmeade.com. I can't wait to see you in person. We got radio affiliates everywhere, so I hope to get to see the radio audience, which I don't get to see enough. Usually when I have a book tour, this is a little independent, so let's listen.
Kilmeade time. All right, Brian. Trump froze $2 billion worth of grants after Harvard rejected his demands to eliminate DEI and combat anti-Semitism. Now he's putting more pressure on the school. Here's what he wrote today. Perhaps Harvard should lose its tax-exempt status and be taxed as a political entity if it keeps pushing political, ideological, and terrorist-inspired supporting sickness. Not sure what that means. Remember, tax-exempt status is totally contingent on acting in the public interest. All right, Brian, how do you see this thing playing out? Well, Harvard can afford to lose $2 billion worth of grants, can't they?
Just the beginning, every year. And a lot of times they don't want to touch that endowment unless they have to. So if you want your academic freedom, then you can go ahead and do what Hillsdale does and don't take any money. But if you do want to get federal grants from the government because you want to do the research, then you got to find a way to clean up anti-Semitism. You know, it's been over a year and a half. I don't see any people rushing to find out what's at the cusp of that and who is really behind the unrest, because Israel's attacked and attacked back. Also, I would love to know what's going on with their international students. I'd love to know what's going on with their curriculum. I'd like to know why they need remedial math at Harvard. I thought this was the best of the best. And we're not talking about a outstanding football player or basketball player that needs some academic help. We're used to stuff like that, even at the Ivies. We're just talking about students. What are you using to judge people? So he's saying, okay, I'd like to know what your admissions is. I want to make sure DEI is not playing a role. I want to look at your faculty and see if there's some diversity there. Also, keep in mind, Princeton also going on the Harvard path. They're looking to sue back to get their money back. And they don't like that Columbia acquiesced and hasn't got their $400 million back. And I think about this, too. This perhaps might be Donald Trump's potentially most significant accomplishment, going into the upper echelon of our institutions and finding out where all the anti-Americanism is and stopping with the foreign money from enemy nations who seem to want to twist the American mind and put their students who don't like the country in the classroom.
You got it. A separate story here. I know you've seen this, but you watch it again and let the viewers see it. Vice President Vance, he dropped Ohio State's national championship trophy. Watch. Later, yeah. Vance wrote on X, I didn't want anyone after Ohio State to get the trophy, so I decided to break it. At least he's got a sense of humor, Brian.
For the radio audience, just know that J.D. Vance and the president were honoring the Ohio State Buckeyes national championship with a trophy that had two pieces. I don't know why they did in two pieces. It had a base and it had a trophy. And he was holding it at the top, not at the bottom, which anybody would. And it just broken. It looks like it broke in half, but they put it back together. So they were able to go all right. Of course, he's from Ohio. I say this. I don't blame J.D. Vance. I blame the trophy maker, number one. Number two, great recovery. And number three, we also watched Jeff Bezos go to greet his capsule and fall on his face. We watched Governor Gretchen Whitmer, a star on the left, cover her face with a folder rather than be seen in the Oval Office. And then we watched J.D. Vance, a guy who's really cool under pressure, separate a trophy. This should all give us a feeling that we can screw up in public, and there's other people that do it who are at the top of their game. So we should feel better should that ever happen to a Stuart Varney at a big speaking event.
I used to do this, but I don't anymore. I like the way you say separating a trophy. Nice choice of words there, Ryan. You're a smart guy. You're a diplomat, too. Kilmeade, you, sir, are all right. We'll see you again soon.
Go get him, Stuart.
Still ahead.
All right, that was Stuart Varney on FBN. This was cool. So we just watched, you know, him flub. I don't know if you guys saw Jeff Bezos after the capsule landed, Blue Origin landed with four women aboard who, Katy Perry, his wife or fiance was on there. Who else?
Gail King. And then there was like actually an astronaut, the first woman from the Bahamas in space, and someone else, I think, some sort of author possibly. Bezos fell on his face.
Right. And then he fell to try to get to the capsule. So it just goes to show you could have the most money in the world. You could be the coolest guy in the world and you could still fall flat on your face. So we'll see how that goes. So the president's going to be speaking today. The former president's going to be speaking today with Joe Biden's going to be addressing handicapped seniors, I think. And he is expected to address Social Security. At which time, you know, it's going to say in his speech that you're not going to listen to, and I might have to listen to in order to make the show better tomorrow. He is going to say that Elon Musk called it a Ponzi scheme and that Donald Trump is going to cut your benefits. Now, he called it a Ponzi scheme because essentially it is. Because what they did is when the money went to Social Security, it was borrowed by various governments over the course of decades and used for other things. At which time they said, well, by the time those people are ready, we'll put the money back. It was just sitting there anyway. We just need it for other things. So we had to move money around to pay people. It's not that it was created as a scheme, but by the way the money was cycled around, it looks like a Ponzi scheme because the money's just moved around to whoever needs it. It is going bankrupt. And if Joe Biden had a brain in his head, and he doesn't, he would say this thing is going bankrupt by 2035. The way I'd attack it is this. The way I urge the Democratic Party to do it is this. Instead, he's going to say Donald Trump, just like I told you, will bankrupt Social Security. And didn't I do a great job? And how corrupt is this guy? And he's going to scream it at the top of his lungs. You know what's different now? Nobody likes Joe Biden, and Joe Biden is like anybody in the Democratic Party. From Barack Obama to Nancy Pelosi, he doesn't want to talk to them, and they don't want to talk to him. And I'd rather not hear from Joe.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest-growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. As we move through Tuesday, it's a lot going on. Sean Davis is going to be with us, CEO and co-founder of the Federalist, former economic advisor to Governor Rick Perry. And Mike Rogers is standing by. A big announcement yesterday. He's going to run for the other Senate seat in Michigan. He almost won the last one, just a few thousand votes shy. And now he's going to go back in and try to replace Democrat Gary Peters. And I think he's going to end up with the full support of the White House. And we'll see where this goes. A lot of breaking news right now. The market is up 134 points on the news that he might give a pause on the cars, new cars, in terms of tariffs, because a lot of these car companies coming up to the president saying, hey, you know what? Most of my parts are overseas. I have mostly an American car made, but I need parts from elsewhere. If you tax them, tariff them, I'm going to have to up my price because my margin's so small. And the president's beginning to listen. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the college crackdown, as well as what's happening with the border, which is all good. With me right now is Mike Rogers. Okay, he's going to be with us shortly. All right, so let's talk about what's happening at the border. And I think this is pretty astounding, too. And the Border Patrol working with the Marines and with the Army to totally control things. We're just about, on the average, about 200-plus people a day trying to get across. You know what they're also doing? They're not only building the wall, but what they were doing before is they would put the wall, they'd get a huge ladder or some type of lift, and then they would put concertina wire on top. So it's okay. The illegal immigrants, the cartel members, would get all the way up to the top, throw a blanket over it, and just jump over. Fine. So these guys had a great idea. They said, what if we put concertina wire about 4 feet below? So if they're going to go and jump, they will go into a bed of razors. And they just, a bunch of guys... in their 20s, went to San Diego, pioneered it in the Army, came back and said, what do you think, sir? And they go, we're going to do this. And that's why they're having the success they're having right now, which is just astounding. And Tom Homan has a lot to do with that, just everyone being on the same page. We'll see where that goes. But most people are focusing on, when it comes to the border, what is happening in the courts with this one MS-13 member. That's according to a judge who is presiding over the case of Kilmar Obrego Garcia. This is what Pam Bondi said as he was shipped out to El Salvador, where he was born, where he came from before he came here illegally. They keep saying Maryland dad or metal, yeah, Maryland husband, whatever. They don't bring up MS-13. Here's what Pam Bondi said about this guy's background. While a court ruled they should take him back because there was a ruling that he shouldn't go back to El Salvador because his survival could be jeopardized, because I guess he's on the outs with MS-13. Cut five.
When you're listening to all these liberal reporters, they keep calling him a Maryland man. He's not a Maryland man. He's part of a foreign terrorist organization. He's a member of MS-13, who, as you laid out in your monologue, came to this country and committed just gang acts. He was caught, and he was two judges, an immigration judge and an appellate judge, ruled that he was an MS-13 member, as well as ICE's testimony.
So that's where it stands. Now the courts want them to bring him back. And that's what everyone's talking about now. That's what Democrats are jumping on. Not that they brought border crossings down 97%. Not that they're down to just 200 a day. Not that they're getting cooperation from Mexico now that put 10,000 Marines on their border. Not that they've gotten land of Mexico's with their permission and the Interior Secretary's permission in order to let the military, like the 10th Mountain Division, do their job and stop the cartels. I think they've down to 32% of where it was in terms of drugs coming across our border on where it was a year ago. 32%. It's all about this guy. Everyone's seeing political opportunity. Here's Marco Rubio, cut six.
The foreign policy of the United States is conducted by the President of the United States, not by a court. And no court in the United States has a right to conduct the foreign policy of the United States. It's that simple. End of story.
And that's what he's saying. And that's what the judge of the Supreme Court said. But they said, you've got to do the best you can to bring him back. The head of El Salvador was there. President of El Salvador goes, no, I don't think so. I don't think I'm bringing him back. Let's bring in Mike Rogers now. Mike, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, it's great to be back. You know, I decided to run for the Senate because I know you missed me.
I know. It's been about 2 months. You barely, I mean, that's a tough loss. I don't blame you needing to collect yourself because you worked so hard for it. The nomination wasn't easy. That was a tough road. And then you lose to Elise Slotnick by how many votes?
About 19,000 out of 5.6 million votes cast. So 0.3%.
How did she run? What did she say during this time about Joe Biden and Kamala Harris? Did she embrace that agenda?
No, she talked about working with Trump.
Yeah.
She talked about how she gets along with everybody, works with everybody. The crazy thing, she went on The View after. So this is what drives me crazy about people who really are left of far left of center who claim to be moderate, and said anybody that voted for Donald Trump does not have a fully developed brain. Right? Now, 52% of Michiganders voted against her, right? So with third parties and everything else, I don't know if I would have started there. But, listen, I get it. 32 years we've had two Democrats in those seats, and we just really didn't get a chance to define ourselves very well. But with very little resources and a magnificent ground game, we were able to come within just a whisper of beating. And here's another interesting. I got more Republican votes statewide in Michigan as a statewide Michigan candidate than any other candidate in Michigan history.
Yeah,
that's
crazy. I mean, you got really close. So that's why I like Dave McCormick. Dave McCormick barely lost to Oz, who lost to Fetterman. And then he came back and won that Senate seat against an established candidate like Casey. Now you're going to run in an open Senate seat.
Yes. An open seat, great name ID. Actually, despite all their negative advertising, my positives are on the upside. And here's the great thing about this. All we have to do, because we got so many votes in the last election, if we get 85% of the people who have already showed up and voted for Mike Rogers to return to the poll in the midterm, that would be about 51% of the votes for us to win. So, think of that. We don't have to go convert Democrats, although we're going to try. There's a lot of disaffected Democrats. We just need you to go and do this one more time, but you got to show up to vote. And so that's our challenge, but we know who that universe is. We know what issues get them fired up. We think this is, just a really good opportunity to finally put some different thought in one of those Senate seats in Michigan. I mean, their tenure for the last 32 years hasn't been all that great. Having two Democrats think exactly the same way, talk exactly the same way, and obstruct good things from happening in the same way. At least have somebody in there that has a different opinion on things might be pretty good for the state.
Right. So you had Governor Whitmer say some things. I'm going to work with Donald Trump when I can. Tariffs in principle, I agree with how they're done. We might disagree with. She gave her cell phone number to Trump that if you need anything in Michigan. Is that the attitude the people of Michigan want? They say purple, but do they like when both sides get along or show an interest in each other?
I think they do as a general populace at the end of the day because, our problems are pretty real. And it's not a solid – I don't believe it's a blue state. It is a purple state. And so people are saying, hey, yeah, I want my perspective at the table. I don't mind you working with somebody to get our perspective done. That's the difference in a state like Michigan. And we've been getting hammered. We've been losing manufacturing year in and year out here. And it's been pretty devastating. Every time a manufacturing job leaves Michigan, that's one middle-class family that doesn't have an opportunity here. I mean, those jobs are really important for the everyday men and women of our state who get up and go to work every day. And so that's why this becomes important. And that's why they're saying, hey, if they can get an agreement and save manufacturing jobs, I'm in.
So right now, Donald Trump says he's considering pausing the auto tariffs as the world economy endures some of the whiplash. And with that, the market's having another good day. Friday was good. Monday was good. Tuesday was good. We're over 40,000 now. So tell me about the challenges of the auto industry, who a lot of these union representatives were behind the president in the Rose Garden April 7th on Liberation Day. How do you view it?
So, listen, I think tariffs as a tool, a targeted tool that are temporary, can be very, very effective. And here's why you have to do it. Think of this. Americans' automobile industry, 80% of engines and drivetrain are produced somewhere else, not in the United States, certainly not in Michigan. That's really not sustainable for a long-term automobile industry. And I'm not talking about just assembly. I'm talking about production of engines and transmissions and all of those things. Is produced somewhere else around the world. And that has to end. And by the way, some of those countries are not treating us very fair on the tariff front. We get higher tariffs than they're charging, and they're trying to keep our products out of their markets. So I believe that we have to do this at some point. I mean, China showed us today, Brian, why this is so important. They decided they were going to the materials to make these magnets, they were going to stop export of these things, which really hurts, you know, military industry, electric cars, all of these things. And they did it because they can, and we put ourselves in a position to let them do that to us. We cannot sustain this. It's not sustainable. If we ever had a major conflict in the world, guess what? Who's building our engines?
No, I hear you. Not only that, it's critical minerals and, they say, heavy rare earth metals, rare earth magnets, and they have it. Now, number one, why are we getting our rare earth from China? And they knew that was a card they were going to play. They played it immediately. Then they decided we're not going to buy Boeing aircraft. First off, from off the top of your head, Mike Rogers, do you know where else we could get these rare earth?
Well, here's the good thing. There's lots of places who are friendly that want to participate. But when you can't, it takes 26 years to get a permit to get a mine for some of these materials, let alone process it. So even Australia sent, you know, they mine it, and they guess where they send it to get processed? China, almost 90% of it. And so this is something that is fixable, and we can take it out of the hands of people who have, you know, nuclear missiles pointed at us, candidly, and I think we should, for this very reason. You've now put them in charge of a sliver of our military and defense base, mm-hmm. As well as our regular commercial base.
Would you do a Defense Production Act action that would make an emergency like we did with ventilators?
You know what they did that I really liked? The Trump administration did rapid permitting. So if you have it, and based on our national security need, they can go through and rapidly do this. 26 years to get lithium or nickel or even rare earths out of the ground is ridiculous. That's why we're losing. And so, you know, the left took over all of the agencies that go through permitting to allow these things to happen. And by the way, much more environmentally friendly to get it out of the ground here than it is anywhere else in the world. And they wouldn't let them, you can't get it. So all the investment went where people were actually allow mines. So there's a lot of effort now to work with our African friends about getting off agreement. So in other words, if you produce it, we'll buy it. And the other thing China does, this is why we're going to have to get creative on this. You go out and you get a mine of which they know they have cornered the market on whatever fill in the blank material. They just drop the price of the material. So what that does is the private sector goes in and they're dead, right? They can't make it. Because China has just dropped the price from whatever, $1 a ton to 10 cents a ton. Well, you're losing your fanny. You can't do it. You got to leave. They've done this over and over and over. And they do it because they want to control these rare earths. So my argument is let's put in place these offtake agreements where the U.S. government says, we're going to pay a base floor of this. If you want to sell it in the open market for more, have at it. But when China tries to dump and it hits this price level, we'll buy it. And by the way, we need it. It's not like we're doing something that we don't need. And that way you can at least start pushing back on the Communist Party's ability to fluctuate prices and tank a capitalist way of trying to get stuff out of the ground. I think that's the kind of thing we have to do. And then this rapid permitting that the Trump administration came out with in an executive order is really effective. Now we just need to put all the players around the table and say, we need to get this done. So when you look at the tariffs, and yes, it's hard. I mean, you know, everybody's 401k is getting slapped around. If he can actually bring companies back, which he's doing, investment back, which is happening, let's put everyone on notice. Listen, you're not going to be able to hinder U.S. products being sold in your country anymore. We're just not going to do that anymore. If you're charging us 10%, we're going to charge you 10%. You're charging us 25%, we're going to charge you 25%. And if we get to that parity, America will win. We're going to win that fight. But it's not been parity. And this is the really hard part. And I think, you know, people got to give them a little time.
Right.
I mean, when you get India and Japan and South Korea and Vietnam saying, hey, we're all ready to deal, that's huge for us. That's a big win.
I know.
For us.
And we got to just watch how rough we are with our allies. You've got to be rough to do it. Don't do it publicly because they have egos and they have constituents too. Lastly, Mike, we only got 30 seconds, but what do you think of Kash Patel so far? You have that FBI background.
Yeah, listen, I think he's doing the right kinds of things. You have got to take the politics out. He's doing exactly that. If they can continue to focus on catching criminals in America, that's what the FBI is supposed to do. That's the FBI I joined, and that's the work I did. There's nobody better at it when it's functioning like that.
All right, so Mike, hopefully this is just one of many appearances as you try to get that Senate seat that just eluded you last time. Mike Rogers, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Brian.
All right, he is going to be running for the Republican seat to get the nomination and then try to become the Republican for Michigan. Don't move. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
When you are out there at this moment, this rocket feels like it is alive. It feels like it is a living, breathing, hissing thing, right?
And there's the gantry pulling back.
And this right here is the moment that they've been training for. 2 days, becoming a crew, becoming a team.
After you go through an experience like this, it's more than a team. It's almost like a family. You are so tight to go through something as intense
executing
as this.
Absolutely.
So, you know, as you said, this is like a bridled beast. This thing wants to take off.
Switch to onboard helium. Here we go. Good luck and Godspeed, ladies. We're cheering you on from
Let's
planet
launch
Earth.
This rocket.
Thrust termination system is armed.
So they were training for 2 days? The bond that you forged for those 2 days.
You're like a family.
Right.
You don't forget that.
Right. We learned how to zip up our onesies, and then we learned how to sit in the seat and then undo the seatbelt when I got up in the air and then came right back down. Look, it shows Jeff Bezos will put his fiance up there, and for the most part, they get along.
Yeah,
so it shows how safe it is.
Well, that's true. The funniest part is they don't say Jeff Bezos' fiance. They said, I'm award-winning journalist. And I said it to Eric yesterday. I was like, oh, award-winning journalist, Lauren Sanchez on it. He goes, who was that? It doesn't ring a bell. I go, exactly. It's Bezos' fiance. That's why.
Right. So they went up there. And, I mean, just, and the other one, the CBS anchor.
Oh, Gayle King.
She says, realize how bad we are down here. We're arguing with each other too much. The world is too new. Until you get up in the air, you realize how mean we are to each other or something. I'm going, what are you talking about?
There's no borders. Someone else said that, too. Yeah. There's all borders. We're all there together.
Right.
We should get along more.
Yeah, good luck with that.
But
then open up your door.
Yeah, it's fair.
All right, so good. Maybe I'm bitter because I wasn't asked to go on for
Could
free.
Be.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
But are you prepared for China to consider selling assets it holds in the United States? And do you want that to happen?
Well, remember, China's been selling off treasuries for some time. It's not a brand new development. You know, the treasuries market will fluctuate. You know, I'm not the treasury secretary, so I'm not the best poised to talk about that. But I think the issue is we've become so dependent on China, and for so many decades we haven't had fair market access. So again, we see China taking action, implementing their policy to try to be less tied up with us as well.
So that is the trade representative, and he's telling me, he's talking about what we're up against. And it looks like China is taking this personal, and it went from tariffs on everybody to tariffs just on China, and they decide to, that's Jameson Greer, they decide to, number one, stop selling us rare earth. Number two, cut off sales of Boeing aircraft. Good luck with that. So you're basically Airbus or bust. And if you're in a rush, don't expect to get it right away. Sean Davis joins us now. He's CEO and co-founder of the Federalist, former economic policy advisor for Governor Rick Perry. Sean, what's your take on where we're at right now with China?
Well, I think we're at a little bit of a standstill right now. A lot of people are trying to analyze this as though negotiations have failed or this is the end. We're at the very beginning stages of a move to really do two things. One, we have to decouple from China. If we didn't learn that after COVID, we're nuts. But we have to decouple from China and have our own independence and not dependence on a foreign enemy of ours for key goods that we have. And then we also have to reindustrialize in America. They're two sides of the same coin. And so I think where we are now with China is we're trying to see who's going to blink first, is we work to get decoupled from them and build back up our own manufacturing base so we don't have to depend on our enemies for key strategic goods.
But their actions are so aggressive, Sean. They said until we're not showing them respect and they think our the tariff move by Trump is laughable and a joke, and they decide to amp up the aggression. Instead of just saying, okay, we're going to go over 100% tariffs, they do the two things I just mentioned. What do you read between the lines there? Do they want this fight? Have they been ready for this?
No, I kind of view that for people who are out there who are poker players, I view this as like a pretty early bluff from China. They know we have the stronger hand. They don't have the domestic capacity to support their economy. China cannot exist without everyone else buying their stuff. That's why China has such a massive trade surplus. They've got a weak hand here. We know they've got a weak hand. They know that we know they've got a weak hand. And I think they're engaged in some early on bluffing here to see if they can kind of maybe blink us off, maybe lead us to believe they're tougher and stronger than they are. It might've worked with another president. I don't think Trump's going to buy that, to be honest.
Well, he said, I'm open to talking. They say, no, not until you show us respect. And they have played their two best cards, I think. You know, outside invading Taiwan, when you go out and take rare earth from us, that hurts electronics, hurts our military. The other thing, Sean, I cannot believe that we're still relying on them for rare earth and magnets and heavy metals. It makes no sense.
Well, I don't think we're totally dependent on them for rare earth minerals. We call them rare earth. We're talking about stuff like lithium and cobalt, which is generally used for the long-lasting batteries. They're not as rare as the name would lead you to believe. What we actually don't have is the capacity to kind of refine them into the form that we need. It's another major reason why we have to build up our industrial capacity here and reindustrialize, number one. Number two, it's also a good sign of why you shouldn't, as a nation, go all electric or try to go all electric, because you end up with these type of sticky supply chains where you're having to depend on people who don't like you to just be able to literally function as an economy. That's nuts.
So I want you to hear what Ray Dalio says, you know, respected investor, Bridgewater founder. Cut 18.
Do you think that these tariffs are being carried out in a practical way or a chaotic way?
I think we'll see. So far, very disruptive. So far, very disruptive, right? And so we don't know what the numbers are. But that could be part of a process, right? It depends where we are at the end of the 90 days. I think that right now we are at a decision-making point and very close to a recession. And I'm worried about something worse than a recession if this isn't handled well.
Are you worried about something worse than a recession?
What I'm worried about is we end up 5 or 10 or 20 years from now with a complete inability to make anything we need to survive as a nation. Right now, we don't make our own medicines. We don't get our own rare earth
That's
materials.
That's next. Pharmaceuticals are next.
Exactly. Fertilizer. We don't make most of our own fertilizer. A lot of our food we don't make. Steel, most of which we don't make. These are core strategic national goods. And I would tell you, if let's say I had a farm, I owned a farm and I'm trying to be self-sufficient, but it turns out that I have to rely on everyone else around me, people who might actually hate me for all the things I need to run a farm, water, food, livestock, seed, fertilizer. I'm not going to last very long as a farmer. And what I think is much a bigger problem than, say, a short-term recession is us becoming eventually a vassal of the Chinese economy where we can't do anything without their permission. That, to me, is the worst-case scenario, not a recession that's a couple months.
So the Trump style is, instead of sitting in a think tank coming up with a policy, Trump style is, hey, welcome to Monday. The world trade, our relationship with the world when it comes to trade has changed forever. 10% across the board. China gets 25%. Fentanyl is 10% in Mexico as well as Canada. And then we're going to add that on to China because you do the precursors. So in traditional politics, things happen gradually. There's an announcement, maybe work through Congress. That's not the way Trump works. What do you think will work?
Well, I think if you look at traditional politics, that's what we've had for the last 50 plus years. It's traditional politics that have allowed China to build up its war machine, that's allowed China to go after our friends, to build up against Taiwan, using the money that we've given them through our economy. Excuse me. So I think the time now is for untraditional politics. I think that's what Trump's doing. You know, we were all alive during the first administration. We saw how the economy was, how strong it was. I'm willing to give the guy a little leeway because again, 50, 60 years of politics as usual, that's what's gotten us in this position. So we need something different.
No, I hear you. And the thing that emerged for me, and I'm a non-economist, you're an economic expert, you're an advisor for Governor Perry, and this is where you thrive. But for me, I need someone to tell me what they're doing. And the guy I like to hear from is Scott Bessent. I don't like hearing from Peter Navarro. And I feel like Mark Lutnick is going for ratings rather than accuracy. So do you think what it's like behind closed doors with Trump? Your ex-boss was energy secretary. Do you think that message is brought over to Trump and saying, listen, step the other guys back. One voice, except for Trump, another voice is going to be Bessent. Nothing else. It's just too much at stake.
Oh, I think the messaging could absolutely be better on this because there's so many moving parts. There's a lot of different equities going on. There is the reindustrialization. There's fixing the trade deals so they're not rigged. There's refinancing $9 trillion of our debt, which we really can't afford to do at 5 or 6%. So we'd like rates to go down in order to do that. That's actually one major reason why China keeps on dumping securities is they want to drive rates up because they know that's a pain point for us. I quite honestly don't understand what the Fed is actually doing, why they're not going and picking up the slack from all the treasuries that China's selling. They've had no problem doing that in the past.
Can you tell me what that means? What do you mean by picking up the slack with China selling?
So China's selling our bonds, trying to drive the rates up.
Got it.
All the Treasury Department, the Federal Reserve. Thank you for clarifying that. The Federal Reserve should go in and just buy those up, pick up the slack that's being created by China dumping bonds into the market. But I do wish we had kind of a unified message, overall strategy coming from the president. Look, the guy's better at marketing and selling and sales than anyone else in that administration. There's people there who are very good at what they do, but nobody does the sales and the communication like Trump. So I wish he would be more clear about the overall strategy, because I think it would give people more confidence that there is a plan underlying all of this.
So I want you to hear what Senator Kennedy said, kind of echoing what you said, cut 17.
I think I know what's in the president's heart, but I don't know what's in his head. The people you're talking about are right. The administration has not given one clear rationale for its tariffs. I think that's intentional. That I don't know, but my guess is it's intentional, and that it is part of the president's negotiating strategy. But Jake, I don't want to feign understanding here. I don't know. But that's my best guess, knowing how the president operates.
So, I mean, if the Republicans in the Senate and somebody like Kennedy, who the president likes a lot, doesn't know, you just got to think the communication could be better. Who could bridge that gap there? James Blair, maybe? Deputy Chief of Staff?
Well, I think the only one who can do it is Trump himself. I mean, you need staff, you need advisors and cabinet people to go in and execute on your strategy. But nobody can sell stuff and explain stuff the way Trump can. You and I could sit back and even try to come up with what we think Trump might say, and it's not what he would say. He's just better at this than everyone else. So I think if he believes he needs to come out at some point and say this is the strategy, he should do it. But, you know, to Kennedy's question there, he said, I don't think there's one clear rationale. He's actually right, because there's not just one. You've got the interest rate issue with refinancing debt. You've got fixing trade deals, which were just bad. Those need to get fixed on principle. You've got decoupling from China, and then you've got reindustrializing America. That's four kind of fairly complicated things right there. It's not something that's easy to just go in and explain and rationalize in a couple sentences.
I hear you. And lastly, the big, beautiful bill. I mean, it's about over halfway there. From what you see, the framework on both sides, knowing they got to bridge the gap, what do you think that's going to do to the economy? Because people fear it's going to add to the debt, but people know that it could also turbocharge this whole thing and bring up the revenue side.
So I worked in Congress as a staffer for a long time, and I will just say I don't have very much confidence in the willingness or desire of Congress to cut much of anything. It's why we've gotten to the point where we have $35, $40 trillion in debt. I think it's why DOGE has been so important, because Congress has just not expressed any desire to do what needs to be done on the cut side. So I very much hope they all prove me wrong for being a cynic here. I personally don't have a lot of confidence that Congress itself has what it takes to go and actually fix our fiscal situation, which is a problem because Congress really is the only one with the authority to do it.
What about the bill? From the makeup of the bill, continuing the tax cuts from 2017, adding things like tax on tips, manipulating SALT a little bit, and taxes on Social Security, some of the other things that they want to bring up, spending up to $1 trillion in defense. Your thoughts?
It's hard to say, you know, with these bills, especially this early in the process, we're in early April, it's like trying to pin Jell-O to a wall. So the principles all sound fine to me. There needs to be way more cutting. We need to be looking at taking away from the debt, not just chipping away at the deficit. So right now, I think the whole thing's a moving target. I want to wait to see what the actual final agreement is that comes out of a conference between the House and Senate before, you know, deciding whether it's good or bad. They've got a long way to go. They've got a lot of work to do.
I'm leaning towards good. I have a good feeling for the framework, and I sense that Congress knows if they don't find a way to get a deal done, they're gonna lose both chambers in the midterms. Sean Davis, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
All right, 1-866-408-7669. We talk about the college campus chaos. Oh, when we come back, also, we'll take your calls. Don't move.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Right, and speaking of brains, I got to wonder what's left of those that fearless space crew that went up in Blue Origin for 3.5 minutes and came back down. The self-important people, for example, that are made up of, who do we have, Lauren Sanchez? You know this whole all-female crew. You find
Katie
it inspirational.
Perry.
Katy Perry, too.
There was another astronaut, a woman from the Bahamas.
Right.
And I think another literary person, a civil rights activist or something of that sort.
All right. So they were out. They survived. And the way they came down and were talking as if they just basically went to Mars and back was astounding. And it actually didn't elude the ridiculous comments they had after did not elude Walter Kern, who was on with Megyn Kelly.
Just a few weeks ago, actual astronauts who got stranded in space for months, floating around in weightless condition, not in this, you know, luxury vehicle, were rescued by another rocket and brought back to Earth. And it hardly made a splash on the media. These people have already gotten 50 times the publicity that those heroes and the person who rescued them got. Jeff Bezos basically put his girlfriend and her pals into a giant vibrator, shot them into orbit for 10 minutes, and they came back telling all about the thrill. We've got everything upside down. And if women get any more empowerment of this sort, they're going to be denied the right to vote.
So that's pretty, very interesting. It does seem kind of stupid, doesn't it?
It was just like, it's a cool experience for them all to do, but the way they made it out, this all female thing, it's historic. Technically, I guess it is, but I mean, they were up there for 4 minutes. They're now one of 60 people who went on that trip. You know, we're sort of at the point where we're lucky enough to say it's semi-regular to be able to do that, right?
Yeah, I would think so. It's going to be, they want to improve the tourist travel, and if you have the money, go spend it. What's wrong with that? Okay, it's another industry, another way to fuel the economy, no pun intended. So I want to talk about something else. Steve Witkoff, astoundingly, this could be enough for a Secretary of State, let alone a successful businessman. He's doing the Iranian deal to denuclearize. He's doing the peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis, Hamas and the Israelis. And he's doing Ukraine-Russia, none of which are really moving at great pace. But I'm not saying it's easy. I wonder, you know, and I don't really know Steve Witkoff. He's sincere. But does he really know the history? So many people say, well, the Israelis are impossible to deal with. Netanyahu is impossible. You know, you'll never have peace with him. He just wants to dominate the whole area and take Gaza back. None of which is true. He's just very practical in the neighborhood he's in. So let's harken back to the 1990s when Bill Clinton, the Democratic icon, was working with Yasser Arafat to do what Jimmy Carter started to do and bring some peace to the region, like with Egypt and Jordan was done. He wants to set up something with Yasser Arafat and the Palestinians. Here's Bill Clinton.
And the only time Yasser Arafat didn't tell me the truth was when he promised me he was going to accept the peace deal that we had worked out, which would have given the Palestinians a state on 96% of the West Bank and 4% of Israel, and they got to choose where the 4% of Israel was. So they would have the effect of the same land of all the West Bank. They would have a capital in East Jerusalem. They would have, I can hardly talk about this, and they would have equal access all day, every day, to the security towers that Israel maintained all through the West Bank up to the Golan Heights. All this was offered, including, I will say it again, a capital in East Jerusalem and two of the four quadrants of the old city of Jerusalem, confirmed by the Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak and his cabinet. And they said no. And I think part of it is that Hamas did not care about a homeland for the Palestinians.
You think Steve Witkoff, you think Steve Witkoff knows any of this? He should. Brian Kilmeade Show. It's just crazy in that Witkoff is dealing with this here and now. And he's trying to get a deal. The deal that they walked away with in the 90s, before Hamas even had the power and the firepower that they had to be able to pull off October 7th. They're not going to get close to that offer. And if they walked away from the deal that Ehud Barak handed over, which is a bad deal, why does anybody think they're going to accept and just go away and have a mini Abraham Accords? It's impossible. It's impossible. And I'd rather have somebody in the midst of that, like Marco Rubio, who knows the history.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door, exploring the life and crimes of five serial predators from across the United States.
It's a very disturbing case.
And never-before-heard interviews and first-hand perspectives.
It's described as pure evil. That's a good description.
The Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door. Listen and follow now with Amazon Music. Must listen to podcasts from Fox News Audio. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.